Why do we find cruel doctors especially shocking? No, I'm not talking about Dr. Greg House, who is simply rude and mad, and who has the advantage of being played by old Etonian comic actor Hugh Laurie. No, I mean really cruel doctors, ones who kill and torture. Is it a matter of trust betrayed? Is it the willful rejection of the sworn oath to do no harm? Or is it the way they seem to go like Dr. Harold Shipman against all the daily practices of saving life and healing, instead to damage and destroy? And there have been quite a few cruel doctors, even if they are a minority of the profession, as Dr. Robert Kaplan explains. He is a forensic psychiatrist, historian and writer at the Graduate School of Medicine, University of Wollongong.
Every year, the day of 24 April will pass unnoticed by most, aside from the Armenian people. This day is to commemorate the genocide of 1.5 million Armenians by the Turks, an atrocity that extended to the murder of up to 750,000 Assyrians and the mass slaughter of the Pontine Greeks in 1923. Why should such an event in the most murderous century in history merit more attention than, say, the Holocaust, Cambodian or Rwanda genocides? Genocide, an activity as old as humankind, will be forever associated with the 20th century. The first genocide, perpetuated by colonising Germans against the Herero in German Southwest Africa in 1904, was soon forgotten. But languishing in historical obscurity is one thing. State-sanctioned denial of genocide as an instrument of national policy is entirely another kind of crime. With the outbreak of World War I, following the disastrous decision of Enver Talat to enter the war on the German side, the Itihadist party unleashed the mass murder of an innocent people whose sole offence, as far as the Turkish nationalists were concerned, was that they existed, and had done so with eminent success since human society flourished in Anatolia, the cradle of mankind. The Itihadist party initiated their genocide along lines that were later to be followed by the Nazis. First, Armenians and other Christian communities were vilified and subjected to regular pogroms. With the outbreak of war, a program of ethnic cleansing and forced deportation was instituted. These moves, supervised by governors of the Anatolian provinces with squads drawn from the local criminal population, had only one intention: the destruction of the Armenian population by any means, followed by forced marches of women, children and old people into desert areas where there was no hope of survival. Killings were done by throat cutting, drowning, clubbing or throwing over cliffs. As an extension of terror, anticipating the Serbian ethnic cleansing of the 1990s, mass rape of women before they were killed was a regular practice. Surviving babies were often given away to Muslim families to be raised as Turkish children. The medical profession played a prominent role in the genocide. Doctors were leading members of the Itihadist party. Many became governors. Their behaviour beggars belief. Dr. Mehmed Resid, involved in the deportation of 120,000 Armenians, was extraordinarily brutal. His activities included smashing skulls, crucifying victims, or nailing red-hot horseshoes on their chests. Other doctors, describing their victims as subhuman, infected them with diseases like typhus. Ophthalmologists gave eye drops to blind children. Military pharmacist Mehmed Hassan was accused of murdering 2,000 Armenian soldiers and allowing his men to rape 250 women and children. Dr. Ali Said killed thousands of infants, adults and pregnant women by administering poison, drowning at sea those who refused the medicine. Dr. Tewfik Ruzdu, in an ominous precursor of the gas chambers of Auschwitz and Treblinka, killed infant victims with a toxic gas. Two doctors, Bahedin Sakir and Mehmet Nazim, are held responsible for over a million deaths between them. The latter, in what must be regarded as one of the most misguided appointments in the history of medicine, was professor of legal medicine at Istanbul Medical School. The attitude of these doctors was summed up by Nazim before his suicide. "Even though I am a physician, I cannot ignore my nationhood. Armenian traitors were dangerous microbes. My Turkishness prevailed over my medical calling. Of course my conscience is bothering me, but I couldn't see my country disappearing. As to historical responsibility, I couldn't care less what historians of other nations write about me." The popular belief is that it was Hitler who asked who now remembered the Armenians. While it is doubtful if he said this, the point is that Hitler and the Nazis remembered the Armenian genocide all too well, and it provided a guideline for the genocide they were to carry out. The view that the group designated for extermination was to be treated as a disease infecting the body politic and therefore extirpated was repeated in virtually identical fashion, save for the added industrial scale in the concentration camps by Nazi physicians. The tragedy of the Armenian genocide was threefold. It further estranged an already stateless people from control of their destiny, the catch cry of 20th century liberation, without a home they could truly call their own. The unfolding of the mass murders, using police, troops, criminals and state officials, especially doctors, by means that are still too horrible to contemplate, provided a template for the Nazi and many other genocides. Finally, the official Turkish refusal to admit that the genocide ever occurred can only be called an ongoing crime against humanity, to which can be added their claim that if anything of this nature had occurred, it was insignificant and, in any event, that Armenians had it coming to them. Living with a genocide is difficult enough for the survivors and their descendants. Living with a genocide denied is immeasurably harder and adds enormously to the burden of sadness, grief and sorrow. The self-serving and vile refusal of the Turkish government to acknowledge the genocide not only denies the Armenian and Assyrian communities the chance to reach some closure on the tragedy, let alone put their grief behind them, but seems to have a mesmerizing hold on the political class. Last year we saw President Obama ignore his election pledge to recognize the genocide, opting instead for a carefully chosen set of weasel words, no doubt selected by the Turkish authorities. In Australia, we have seen Foreign Minister Stephen Smith condemning the decision of Fairfield Council to permit an Assyrian genocide monument, a response that has passed unnoticed by the media. While the government is prepared to go to extraordinary lengths to confront the Japanese over whaling, potentially jeopardizing millions of dollars of trade, the foreign minister's response to placate a country like Turkey, with whom our links could be described, at best, as limited, indicates that a government that puts the rights of a few hundred whales above those of several million people has a seriously distorted view of human rights, history, and morality. After World War II, it was widely held that the Nazi and Japanese doctors were an aberration, and the Nuremberg medical trials in 1946 had provided guidelines to ensure that such atrocities did not recur. Far from it. Since 1945, medical involvement in abuse of human rights has been a growth industry, starting with abuse of psychiatry in Eastern Europe, China and Cuba, to punish anti-government dissidents. In South America, numerous doctors were involved in torturing opponents of the right-wing dictatorships. In apartheid South Africa, cardiologist Wouter Besson, known as Dr. Death, organized bizarre schemes to eliminate anti-government forces. Recently, there have been troubling reports about the role of doctors in torture of detainees at Guantanamo Bay. The continuing involvement of the medical profession in genocide confirms that, in the words of one commentator, it contains within itself the seeds of its own destruction. The most recent example is psychiatrist Dr. Radovan Karadzic. During the Bosnian War, 1992 to 1995, Bosnian Serb forces committed numerous atrocities, including mass execution, rape, torture and forced removal. 250,000 people died and a million more were forced to become refugees. Concentration camps, not seen in Europe since the Nazis, were re-established. A new word entered the lexicon, ethnic cleansing, the use of brutal force to remove Muslims from territories claimed by the Serbs. Dr. Karadzic, a practicing psychiatrist up to the time he became president of the Republika Srpska in 1992, used his group therapy training to design terror tactics. After being on the run for 11 years, he was extradited to The Hague to face trial on charges of crimes against humanity and genocide, crimes rated as the worst in Europe since 1945. These charges make him the first doctor so indicted since the Nuremberg doctors' trial in 1946. So the world goes about its business, content to forget the century-old martyrdom of peoples perceived as lacking in geopolitical status. But their case is undeniable. If we don't allow the Armenian victims their long-denied peace, we are all vulnerable to the next nationalist force whose only raison d'etre is to obliterate those who threaten them by their mere existence. Then it will be too late to protest.
The Lessons of History. Dr. Robert Kaplan is a forensic psychiatrist with the Graduate School of Medicine at the University of Wollongong. Next week, Milton Osborne returns to a first love and a region of concern, the Mekong, now more vulnerable than ever. I'm Robin Williams.